It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
All right, good morning. I'm Kyle. He's James. I'm back from a trip to the desert. Which is funny. You guys are like, oh, he's in the North Pole. Not very much the opposite. It's in Arizona. Anyways, salute. Got back just in time to watch that debacle last night at Golden 1 Center. Where, man, what a roller coaster.
That's a good way to describe it.
Kings lose 130 to 129. And by the time I turned the game on, the Nuggets were already up like 25 to 6 or some insane score like that.
23-6, yeah, probably.
Like, what the heck?
What in tarnation?
What in tarnation? And then it looks like, oh man, this is going to be one of those games where they just get run out of the building. They came out not focused. They came out flat. And the Nuggets, if you're going to come out flat against a team like the Nuggets, they're liable to steamroll you.
Kyle, I thought like instantly you saw matchup issues all over the court. You know, the first thing they did was they put Aaron Gordon in the post and just backed DeMar DeRozan right down and scored over the top of him. Then they tried to abuse Doug McDermott for a couple of minutes because, of course, Doug McDermott had to start because Keegan Murray came up with a weird ankle soreness out of nowhere.
We'll talk about it.
I thought the whole vibe and the whole building was weird and odd, and no one knew what was going on, and there was boos starting in the first quarter. Because
probably started before the game.
People were booing.
Oh, Kyle. Got it. Okay, yeah, got it.
They were booing.
Okay.
They were upset that they had spent their hard-earned money, and the Kings came out and looked like they were disengaged.
Brutal. So it looks like one of those games.
Yeah.
But hey, going a little like 10-2 run. You get it under 20. If they were behind by as many as 23. But you get it under 20, okay. You get it to 15. All right, you got it to 10. Okay, now it's single. And then they come back and they take a lead.
Mm-hmm.
And now it looks like the Kings are going to steamroll. It's like the Kings are rolling. It's like, all right, hey, they've never been. I'm good? I don't.
Are we not on the air?
Okay, now we're good. Yeah. I just forgot how to do my job. Thanks. Thanks.
There we go.
Fine. Good Lord. Take 2 days off and forget how to do this job. Anyways, good morning, everybody on the radio. James, Kyle, et cetera, et cetera. But then the last 4 minutes happened where the Kings went up 10.
Huh.
And they go up 10. I'm like, wow, it's over. They're going to win this thing by like double digits.
I thought it was over. I had already written the lead.
And yeah, it's like, holy smokes. What a freaking win.
Yeah.
And then the wheels came off. And they didn't, like, start to wobble. That's what was crazy about it, is it happened so fast that there wasn't, like, they're still all right. It was like they went from up 10 to, oh, no danger. It was that quick.
Oh, yeah.
And the common thread that runs through the entire night for me was, actually, hang on. We'll get to the common thread. But the Kings still have a chance to win it at the end of the game.
Yeah.
Jamal Murray hits a tough shot. That's what he does. Little free throw line jumper.
Yep.
But again, 8 seconds left. Kings run a perfect play. Domas on the short roll. Catch. Finds DeMar cutting. DeRozan drops the basketball. Picks it up. Still has a little turnaround good look.
Or Doug McDermott sitting in the corner going, it's me, Doug.
Doing spirit fingers
Hi.
Out there.
Like jazz hands.
Turn around, little 10-footer, miss, comes off the rim, Nuggets win. And I got to tell you, losing by one to the Nuggets is not the end of the world. We even said, going in, you got to beat New Orleans, you can lose to the Nuggets, it's not, okay, you can lose to the Nuggets, but then you got to go start winning some games. And that's still the case. Mm-hmm. But the way they lost last night, with De'Aaron Fox, DeMar DeRozan, Malik Monk, we got, what are you doing crunch time? Teams aren't going to be able to stop. Well, they also couldn't get any stops. And that's where the common thread of the night comes in, where, A, they missed Keegan Murray badly on the defensive end.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
But it just underscores how shallow they are at that spot. That when Keegan's not playing, they have no answers on defense specifically.
No.
There was just, they had nothing.
No, they don't have an answer when Keegan's not playing. Defensively, at the small forward spot, the power forward spot, they do not have an answer. And, like, God bless Jay Crowder. Like, he goes in there and tries to do his best. But, like, even a natural matchup problem, like, mm-hmm. they kept looking at different players. And I think the one thing, like, over this stretch that we have learned, that Mike Brown, I think, has learned, and I think it is a blessing, and while he's not playing offensively very well at all, Colby Jones can guard up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something for that sure. All of a sudden the Kings are realizing that he can guard a 6'10" Michael Porter Jr. and hold his own.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been able to guard up repeatedly over mm-hmm. the last couple of weeks, which is why he's been on the court. Now, does he deserve 18 minutes? I don't think so. But sure. The fact is that he brought energy and he did some of the little things. And it just shines like the glaring problem that this roster has. It's the same problem they've had for 3 years, Kyle.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we're not asking them to reinvent the wheel. We're asking them to go out and do what every other team has done in the NBA. Go get a 6'7" to 6'9" small forward, power forward that can play defense and can hit a three.
Mm-hmm.
We say they don't grow on trees. They do grow on trees because everyone else has been able to pluck these off of trees everywhere. Mm-hmm. And they have a bevy of them and the Kings don't. And, you know, it's not even... The Kings don't even have, like, a Watson. They don't even have a Peyton Watson to come off the bench.
Good player, Peyton Watson.
Yeah. Well, no, he is a good player, but the fact that they don't even have, like, a third guy or a fourth guy that you can turn to is alarming, and yep. It shows the glaring weakness of this roster. Now, look, you go out there and you score... You let a team just thump you in 41-21 in the first quarter. But you come back and drop 47 on them in the second quarter?
Yeah.
47. So for everything that people want to say about how bad the Kings were in the first quarter, the Nuggets are saying the same thing about how bad they were in the second quarter.
Right.
And how this is part of our season and how we can't put away teams. And yeah, like, but I just felt like Mike Brown keeps harping on this. It's not about the offense. It's not. It's that the Denver Nuggets in the last 4 minutes of the game, you were up 119-109. In 4 minutes, they shot 7-7 from the field and 4-4 from the free throw line and scored 21 points in the last 4 minutes of a game because you couldn't get a stop.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just it. You can't get a stop at the NBA level. It doesn't matter what your lead is. You can give it up.
That's it. That was the other thing that stuck out to me last night. We'll dive further into the final play and we'll talk about Keegan and his ankle soreness. But the other thing that sticks out to me is in that second quarter, to me, Keon Ellis established himself as a player that just needs to play. I understand that he's going to make mistakes, and I fully get that maybe they're mistakes that are going to frustrate Mike Brown to the point where he's like, God, I want to take him off the court. But Keon came in and flipped the complexion of that game last night.
He had 5 blocks, dude.
He had 5 blocks. First guard in the, I think I saw, it was the first guard in the league to have 5 blocks this year.
Yeah, and it's the second time in his career, his 3-year career, that he's had 5 blocks.
He was a plus 16 in the second quarter and scored 3 points. Like that's where like a plus minus as a stat sticks out to me.
Oh, yeah.
And he played the entire second quarter, save for 1 second, according to Basketball Reference. So he's a plus 16 and just flip that script. We talked about how flat the Kings came out and looked.
Mm-hmm.
And then Keon came into the game and a lot like he did last year, where, man, Keon entered the starting lineup and the complexion of how the Kings win games just changed.
Well, they started winning games. I mean, I think they won his first 8 starts.
Yeah, right. Because of, and it was like consensus that defensive energy is meaningful.
Oh, yeah.
And I think you saw it last night where he just woke the Kings up out of whatever malaise they were in to start the game. So to me, I know Keon Ellis isn't perfect,
mm-hmm.
but his impact last night, specifically in a game without Keegan, where we said they don't have another Keegan, Keon's probably as close as you got. And to me, some nights it's going to be more minutes, some nights it's going to be less, but there can't be any more Keon DNPs.
No, I totally agree. And for every, I got to be honest, for every minute that Doug McDermott plays, I want Keon Ellis there alongside him as, you know, yin and yang. Like one guy's going to shoot the three nonstop. Every time he touches a ball, he's going to shoot it. And the other guy's going to play defense. You have to have somebody that can defend if you're going to put Doug McDermott on the court. And I thought Doug did the best he could, but he's just like super undersized. I watched them walk out on the court for the tip-off, and he, of course, he's lining up alongside Michael Porter Jr. Michael Porter Jr. is like a legit 6'10".
Yeah, he is a tall person.
And broad-shouldered. As he's gotten older, he's gotten bigger. He's a bigger dude. And him standing next to Doug McDermott was like, well, that right there is a problem.
Yeah.
That's not going to work out. Like, what exactly are you supposed to do?
Right.
When, you know, every single position on the court, they're 4 inches taller than you.
Yeah.
And it, that's just, you walked into that game and that's the reality of your situation. And, I thought that they did a very good job of competing. I thought Keon, again, did such a great job of competing and fighting and changing the defensive temperature in the room.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you got to figure out how to close out a game.
And that's why last night was so frustrating to me. If they had just lost 130 to 129, just kind of back and forth, and maybe Jamal Murray hits a shot late and the Kings just miss a three or whatever it was, okay. But to come back the way you did, to be up 10 with 4 minutes to go.
Yep.
And this is supposed to be this offense that, man, what are you going to do in crunch time when guarding them? And the Nuggets didn't even have to guard last night. That's why you're going to have physical mistakes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I know in baseball, I don't know in other sports, but coach would say you can live with a physical mistake, you can't live with the mental ones.
Yeah.
So it's not like the Kings forgot to play or Sabonis turned it over or something like that. It was a physical mistake from DeMar DeRozan. But on the other hand, you feel really good about the Kings going into a situation where they're up 10 with 4 minutes to go. You feel good about a lot of teams in that situation. But there's so many options offensively. It's like, hey, you know what? There's nothing the Nuggets can do. The Nuggets can score every time, but the Kings are just going to score every time too. And the fact that they're smoking a 10-point lead inside of 4 minutes, I just can't. That's one I can't feel okay about. And that's why, despite the fact that we talked last week and we went, you can lose that one to the Nuggets. You can't lose that one the way it went.
I'm with you, and I could sense like the frustration after the game from Mike Brown.
Sure.
I thought when we got to the end of the game that we might get one of those, we dug a deep hole and somehow we found a way out of that hole, but you know, we fought, and you know, I'm proud of the guys for the effort they gave after that first quarter. I thought we might get that. No, it was like attention to detail, attention to detail, attention to detail. He's like, we got beat on the back cut more times tonight than we have the entire season combined.
It was brutal, dude.
And it's veteran players getting beat on a back cut again and again and again. Veteran players. It was not rookie or second year players that don't know what they're doing. It was veterans getting burned on back cuts. Like, what are you doing? Like, the game plan was very specific. You look at their numbers, they're the number one assist team in the league and the number one two-point shooting team in the league. They shoot a ton of twos, and they shoot a high percentage of twos, and they average over 30 assists per game. Okay, you get it. They shoot 38% from three, but they're only shooting 30 a game, so you're not going to worry about that.
Mm-hmm.
It's because all they do is back cut you. Like, the Kings knew the game plan coming in, and they gave up 76 points in the paint. 76! Now, I covered a game one time early in my career where the Denver Nuggets came into Sacramento with George Karl as a head coach. And I think they scored, it was either 91 or 92 points in the paint.
Did JaVale McGee have a huge game that game?
Yes.
It might have been there.
It was JaVale McGee, and it was Kosta Koufos, and it was like...
I think it was in December.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it was probably the last couple of weeks of... Maybe it was the last week that that Paul Westphal was a head coach. Either that or it was the year before. Mm-hmm. And Paul was just beside himself, just so embarrassed. Like, how do you get beat on the same exact play the entire game? They took like two total jumpers. Well, they hit like two total jumpers. And they only took like 10 shots outside the paint. And that's That's what that game felt like last night.
That's tough.
I thought that there were so many points in that game last night where the Kings showed promise, but then also showed you who they have been this season. And like the frustration level as a coach, like I don't know how you explain a team that goes down 41-21 after first quarter and then goes out and scores 47 at this, you know, like 5 minutes later.
Yeah.
Like what in the world? Like how do you judge your team outside of the fact that you're just inconsistent? And that's it.
And that's where this is starting to get really disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen teams before. This is not a season's over conversation. This is a disappointing start continues conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Because the fact that we're still sitting here 27 games in now, talking about consistency. The thing about when you say consistency with a team, you mean playing well. And when you're inconsistently playing well, guess what that means?
You're inconsistent.
It means you're not very good.
It means you're not very good.
So when people go, well, man, you know what? The Jacksonville Jaguars would be better if they were more consistent. Oh, you mean just if they were good?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's it. I agree. If they were good, they would be a better team for sure. Like that's what. So when you're inconsistent mm-hmm. and it's night in, night out, hey, look, here's these back-to-back really awesome performances against the Jazz and the...
Oh, who did they beat?
Who'd they score 140 against? Oh my God.
Oh no. Well, they beat the Spurs.
The Spurs. It was the Spurs. They beat the hell out of the Spurs. The Spurs and then the Jazz.
Okay.
You know, two like awesome games. Yeah, you love to see it. And then you come back and it's not. It hasn't snowballed where they've in a good way.
Yeah.
Where they've won 5, 6, 7 in a row where you can afford to, okay, yeah, you dropped one, it's okay. Like, every loss feels magnified right now because they can't string together wins.
Well, that and, like, someone put out the stat last night. I think it was Matt George put out the stat. The Kings have been in 11 games that are decided by 5 points or less, and they're 3-8 in those games. And that was supposed to be the strength of this team.
That was, yes.
The strength of this team is that you have two of the best closers in the game, and realistically, three of the best closers in the game when you throw Malik Monk in there.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't figure out a way to close a game. And to me, so many times this season, it just felt like you went with the wrong guy in the wrong moment. Like you felt like, oh, well, we've got to get it to our closer. And it was the wrong closer. You're like, okay, why did you do that? Like, why is it that you were like riding the hot hand throughout the first, you know, 8 minutes of the fourth quarter and then you went away from that?
Really weird.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm even looking at like their expected win total from Basketball Reference right now. 16-11. They're 13-14 on the season.
Brutal, man.
Expected win total. So
it's
just absolutely crazy. 16-11, just so people know, that would put you at the number 5 seed in the Western Conference.
Mm. Where is... give me 1 second. I need to find... The point differential stuff is insane for the Kings. Because they are, I believe, before I say this, give me 1 second.
ESPN always has the point differential in the standings.
Yeah, that's where I was going. Okay, here we go. So of the Kings are a +3,
mm-hmm.
and they are 13-14. The other teams that are under 500,
Yeah, so Portland...
-2.5 in the East. The Hawks, -2.5. Pacers, -2.9. Bulls, -3. They're all within a game of the Kings. All minus.
Yeah.
Detroit Pistons, -3.2. You go to the West. San Antonio, 13-13, -2. Lakers, 14-12, -3.5.
Yeah, that's wild.
The Nuggets are +2.7 points per game. And they're 14-10.
Hmm.
I mean,
yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense how they keep losing tight games. I mean, and again, so many close games this season, and the fact that you can't, you know what you need to do in that situation? You need to strip it down and go, okay, we're going back to who we were last year, who we were the year before. We got one guy who's going to handle the ball primarily in these situations. That one player is De'Aaron Fox, and if somebody else takes a shot, that's fine. but it's because Fox gave it to you.
Yeah.
That's it. Mm-hmm. Like, the confusion in the last 5 minutes of a game or 4 minutes of the game. Again, I thought the play was spectacular. Fox got double teamed. He finds Sabonis.
Yep.
Sabonis instantly runs right at the rim. Two guys collapse. He throws a perfect bounce pass to DeMar DeRozan, who had just gone baseline and dunked on them maybe a minute before, mm-hmm. 45 seconds before, goes right at the rim and fumbles the ball. Even when he recovers, there's not a player in the league I want taking an 8-foot jump shot outside more than I want DeMar DeRozan taking mm-hmm. it in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
Just miss a shot. That's it. You missed yeah. a shot, but you shouldn't put yourself in that situation. One defensive stop, you're not in that situation. Two defensive stops, you're winning handily by 3 or 4 points down the stretch. Not right. handily, but you're winning the game without it being like a pressure situation. You just couldn't get a stop. And part of the reason is because you had no Keegan Murray, but also part of the reason is in the final couple of minutes, you're trying to score because they're scoring, and so you're going away from some of your defensive players
mm-hmm.
in that moment. You know, of course you're going to choose offensive guy over a defensive guy because that's what the last couple of minutes of a game usually go down to.
And that's where this is again a little bit of a Keegan Murray thing with him not playing. But the clutch time thing is a two-way street. And that inability to get a stop, and maybe it's just the Nuggets are a tough matchup because of their size, and mm-hmm. they can take advantage of DeMar DeRozan in ways other teams can't. I'll hear that. But this is where, like, defense does matter. At least a little bit.
Oh, it matters.
The Nuggets got a lot of good looks last night, late in that game. And you just have to... There's going to be nights where shots don't fall. There's going to be nights where DeMar DeRozan uncharacteristically mishandles a pass and then misses a shot that he hits 75% of the time.
Yep.
That's going to happen.
If he didn't drop the ball, it's a wide open dunk.
And yeah, right.
You know, again, I don't know how much time is left with that dunk, but, you know, they would have had probably, I don't know,
They'd had a couple of seconds.
2.8 yeah. seconds or something.
Sure. I think the right play was made there.
Oh, I think so.
Devil's advocate, just for a second. Devil doesn't need any more advocates, but I'll do it. I don't know how I feel about Fox giving up the ball so early. I don't. That's one where if somebody says, "Well, Fox should have the ball in his hand," like, okay, I have a hard time pushing back against that.
Okay, and like for me to play devil's advocate to your devil's advocate, I would say when I look at the box score and I see 28 points for Domantas Sabonis, 25 points for Malik Monk, I see mm-hmm. 17 points for DeMar DeRozan, 16 points for Doug McDermott, all of them shooting close to 50% from the field.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't care who's taking the shot. If it's the right shot, it's the right shot.
Sure.
And I get it. Fox is the guy. But Fox wasn't the best player the entire night last night.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other players. Like, man, I don't know if anybody else caught this, but Jokic wanted no part of that Sabonis matchup. He was so tired of getting beat up.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted zero part of that matchup late in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Sabonis got into his chest, and Jokic just started backing off. Like,
yeah.
Dude, go ahead and do your thing. You don't need to, like, pop me with your right shoulder every single time because I'm just going to get out of the way now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where you were at in that game. Mm-hmm. Like, I would have been okay with Sabonis taking the shot. And
that's the other aspect of this is just go up with it. You don't have to make the pass every single time.
No, but he saw everyone collapsing on him. Like, I saw what he saw. Like, you had Jokic there, but
mm-hmm.
but Gordon and Porter were collapsing,
mm-hmm.
and it was the right play, and it was a perfect play. All he had to do is go up with him. He might have had to clutch and dunk it, but at the same time, you're looking at a guy who's a career like 87% free throw shooter. Mm-hmm. You think he's either getting the score, or mm-hmm. he's getting an and one,
yeah.
or he's going to the line and he's going to hit both. And mm-hmm. again, the point I was going to make there, the Kings shot 19 of 20 from the free throw line last night. Like, there's so many aspects of the game that they did do right. And even in that situation, that's where you're okay with DeMar DeRozan. to have DeRozan catch the ball, fumble the dribble after catching the ball was like stunning.
Yeah.
And then to recover and still miss and barely miss, it's just like, it was heartbreaking.
It's
like,
tough.
I think watching Sabonis last night, probably the most emotional I've ever seen him in a game.
Mm-hmm.
He was yelling and screaming and pounding his chest every time he made a pass to one of his teammates that scored mm-hmm. a bucket. Like, he was so into that game. And I can imagine today that dude can probably hardly walk.
Yeah, he's hurting.
The fall he took, I cannot believe he finished that game.
Yeah.
But
That had like cracked rib, fractured rib, something all over it.
Oh, yeah.
Like the way he fell and the way he was like trying to loosen up.
He sat courtside in some people that I know seat. He was just sitting there for like 3 minutes while they stopped
the game.
I've
never seen that in my life, by the way.
Where he just sat courtside. Like,
yeah, didn't make it to the bench.
He didn't make it to the bench.
Just went, I'm going
to
sit there.
I'm going to sit right. It was right where he fell, and it's yeah. right underneath the basket mm-hmm. and probably 15 feet away from their bench.
Yeah, it was the baseline seats. Yeah.
yeah.
It was so, it just
you can
couldn't
see my boys wearing Kings Beach shirts, sweatshirts all the time right there.
That's so funny. yeah, couldn't make it to the bench. I was certain. I'm like, oh, he's done. He's not coming back in this game.
Oh, no, and I thought he might be out for like a week or two. Like
I'm going.
Cartilage injury, that could be all kinds of things.
Yeah.
Oh, he was
Which
hurt.
It might still be.
Yeah.
He might have just gotten it out.
The whole rest of the game, like,
yeah.
Oh, I hurt.
yeah, certainly didn't feel good. All right, we'll keep diving into this game last night because the Keegan Murray of all this is, well, the wing depth of all this is the overarching theme of the night, and we'll continue discussing that. Monday Night Football took place last night. Don't blame me if you missed it, but I had one big takeaway from that. We'll discuss. We've got some 49er stuff from over the weekend. We've got mad props. And also coming up a little bit later, I have an insane NBA stat that I'm obsessed with to the point that I'm checking it every single day.
Uh-oh.
And we'll get into that as well. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insiders. We're hanging out with you till noon. And this is ESPN 1320. It's Sacramento Sports Leader.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
James Hamm's there. I'm Kyle. We're hanging out with you till noon. I had a question for everybody. What are you doing on January 6th?
I don't know.
We're giving away tickets to a Kings game. That's what we're doing. The Kings host the Miami Heat on January 6th, and we want to send you to Golden 1 Center for that game. It's super easy to enter. You just go online to ESPN1320.com. We'll pick 5 winners, and it doesn't get any easier than this. You go to ESPN1320.com.
Okay.
You enter at the contest page, and you will be entered to win a pair of tickets to the Heat versus the Kings on January 6th at the Golden 1 Center. Tickets courtesy of the Sacramento Kings. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
I might go to that one.
Oh, yeah?
I don't know. I have no idea what's going on. Is that a Friday? Saturday?
I don't. I think I'll be there.
I would imagine. If you're not, it means a small calamity has happened.
Something's happened.
January 6th is a Monday. Ooh. Interesting. Anyways. There was Monday Night Football last night. Here's my takeaway. Because there were two games.
Mm-hmm.
It was the Vikings against the Bears. Not an interesting game. And the Falcons against the Raiders, also not an interesting game. Kirk Cousins stinks. Nice toast. I used to be not a Kirk Cousins like defender, because I never felt like he was great. But also, I think people talked about him like he was Nathan Peterman.
Oh, yeah.
And he's definitely better than that. He's a really, really effective player and has been for a long time.
Last season, he was great until he hurt himself.
Yeah, man, he was cooking.
Yeah.
So I don't think Kirk Cousins sucks, but also I've not been on like, oh, that team has Kirk Cousins, they're a Super Bowl contender.
No.
Not at all. Like not even a little bit. But Cousins last night against the Raiders goes 11 of 17 for 112 yards, a touchdown and an interception. And he's done, dude. And the reason this matters, and by the way, in his last 5 games, he has 9 interceptions and 1 touchdown.
Oh.
Yeah, man. leading the league with 16 interceptions this year in 14 games. He has 18 touchdowns.
Oh, he had 18 touchdowns before he got hurt last year through like six games.
Yes. He's cooked.
Oh, man.
He was already not super mobile. Now he's even less so after the Achilles injury. You can tell his arm strength is not the same.
We can't step into a ball like he could before.
Right.
Yeah, that's tough.
So here's why this matters. Because if he was playing okay and the Falcons just went, hey, we're going to go the Michael Penix route. We're gonna hand the keys to him. We're going to cut Kirk Cousins. The Kyle Shanahan-Kirk Cousins thing would matter. Mm. It would come up again. And with the Purdy contract stuff looming, Kirk Cousins would have been a major part of the 49ers offseason discussion.
Mm.
So, and I was ready for it. I was fully prepared for the, because Cousins had, in a win over Dallas, 3 touchdowns, no picks, and completed 79% of his throws. That was on November 3rd. That gave him, how many touchdowns did I say he had? 18?
18 on the season.
That gave him 17 touchdowns through 9 weeks.
Oh, 16 picks, jeez.
And I went, man, this Kirk Cousins thing might be real. If the Falcons move on, he's horrible. I'm out. Not a good player anymore. That was my big takeaway from last night.
Yeah, with the, like, to point out the bigger issue, too, is Bijan Robinson, 14 games played. Drake London, 14 games played. Darnell Mooney, 14 games played. Ray McLeod, their third wide receiver, 14 games played. Kyle Pitts, their tight end, 14 games played. He's had all of his,
yes,
all of his weapons.
Yes.
Every single game.
Every game.
All weapons.
Drake London.
Yeah, all of them are there. Yeah, Drake London, 919 yards, 78 receptions, 7 touchdowns. He's been good. Not great, but good. Like, all of them have been healthy. Like, what happened? Like, you were wandering around, like, having a perfectly good season, and then, boom, like, you got hit in the head with a sledgehammer.
I have no idea what happened.
Yeah. Brutal.
Lose to New Orleans, get blown out by Denver, lose to the Chargers, get blown out by Minnesota,
oof,
beat the Raiders.
Well,
good for them. They're now 7-7.
At least there's the Raiders out there.
They're now 7-7. Devondre Campbell was officially suspended yesterday by the 49ers after quitting on them Thursday night. We didn't get a chance to talk about this together.
Yeah.
I'm
sure you've talked about this a lot on the Candlestick Chronicles.
Yeah, talked about it a lot, written about it a lot. Just insane. We've seen a player retire at halftime.
Oh, yeah.
It's just so rare that a player goes, nah, I'm not going to play today. And just leaves.
Yeah.
I kept waiting for another shoe to drop. I kept waiting for there to be more. I kept waiting for he had this injury or this thing happened in his life. Nope. Just had his feelings hurt that he wasn't going to play.
Mm.
And we got a report over the weekend from Jay Glazer from Fox Sports that said it was John Lynch who kicked Campbell off the sideline.
Oh.
Like, John Lynch came down from the suite that he watches games from.
Oh.
And his alter ego, Red 47, quote unquote, came out. And Jay Glazer said players called him after the game and was like, yo, that guy's insane. John Lynch. So I can't only imagine what was said between those two guys. But here's what John Lynch had to say publicly in a statement yesterday when the 49ers announced that Devondre Campbell is suspended. Quote, we have suspended Devondre Campbell for 3 games due to conduct detrimental to the team. We will have no further comment on the matter.
Hmm.
That's the end of it.
The end.
They hate this dude.
Well, not only that, but you suspend him so you can, number one, fine him.
Mm-hmm.
You can take away his game checks.
Yes.
On top of that, you can start recouping some of his guaranteed, well, his $5 million salary on the season.
He won't. So I believe the max you can fine a player is 4 game checks.
Okay.
I think that's what I saw. Plus he'll miss game checks for the missed time.
Yeah.
Plus, he's probably not going to get to the 70% snap incentive that he had in his contract.
Okay.
That was going to pay him some 6-figure number.
Ooh.
A couple hundred thousand dollars.
Okay. Boy, this was a poor decision by him.
Right.
Well, plus the other thing they did is they said, hey, we're going to suspend you instead of cut you. So you can't go just join the Detroit Lions and go try to win a Super Bowl.
Which I don't know what team would want him.
No, but there might be some team that needs him.
Sure.
I mean, like the injuries this weekend were, especially for the Lions.
So rough, man.
Oh, man. Just like you just feel for him. I mean, defensive lineman, a cornerback, and a star running back.
They have, I believe, 15 defensive players on IR right now. Dude, that's why the whole Kyle Shanahan conversation, and oh, he hasn't won a Super Bowl yet, so he has to be fired now. That's why I can't get there, because winning the Super Bowl is so freaking hard. The Lions have been the best team in the league for most of the year. And they might just not have enough dudes to win the Super Bowl. Like, they might not be able to reach the level that they need to reach, because you know what? They're just not healthy enough. And that's not anything on the players. That's not anything on the coaching. That is football being a brutal sport. And guys get hurt. And oftentimes, a Super Bowl is a war of attrition. And you have David Montgomery go down. Aleem McNeil went down. Carlton Davis went down.
It's just brutal. Like
three. If you're not super locked in with the Lions, Aleem McNeil is like their best defensive lineman remaining.
Yeah, because Aiden Hutchinson has been out for
weeks,
months at this point.
And Carlton Davis is like their number one corner. I'm sure someone can nitpick that. He's one of their top two corners.
Okay.
And David Montgomery is their one of their two headed monster at running back. Done for the year. Season-ending MCL surgery. That sucks.
Yeah.
That's just, man.
I did, I was very confused with the reporting. Like, I watched, I think it was Ian Rappaport, goes on, and, like, the video clip is, you know, and to make matters worse, they just signed David Montgomery to a two-year, $18 million extension. It's like, why does that matter? Like, he's going to be there for the two-year, $18 million. Like, why does that matter in this conversation? You just lost a running back who was very good.
Yeah. I guess long-term, you're worried about production, but 2 years and $18 million is not going to make or break the Lions.
Well, no, and you should have paid him either way.
He's been
a great player for you all season long. I mean, did you see the stat line that was floating yesterday?
No.
On the season, his yardage, rushing yardage prop was 775.5.
Oh, no.
775.5 for the season. He finished with 775.
No way.
That's what was floated yesterday, the prop bet.
No way.
Yes way.
I'm cross-checking this. Did you cross-check this?
I didn't.
Did you fact-check this?
I didn't fact-check it. All I know is that's what was put out by one of the betting websites yesterday.
Dave Montgomery, rushing yards. It might have been 775 at one book.
Yeah, like preseason. That was his preseason number. I'm just saying. I think it was what BetShark or someone like that put it out.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, like it, for those out there, that's a bad beat.
That's really rough.
Sorry if you had...
If that's the case, that is brutal.
If you had the over on David Montgomery's rushing...
Because you don't even have the... He's done for the year. You don't even have the hope of like, oh, maybe he can get in a game and...
No.
Try it out and get a yard for me. Oof.
No.
I hate that, man.
You know who I don't hate it for, though?
Don't say it. Nobody cares.
The Swift, Kirk, and the Dickers.
Yeah, nobody cares.
We're going. We've advanced in the playoffs, people.
We have. We sure have. And if we win our league, we're going to buy drinks.
Somewhere.
We're going to have a tab somewhere.
That's right.
And we're going to invite everybody.
And we do have Jahmyr Gibbs. That's why it's a good thing for us.
That's big time.
It is big time for
us. Big time for us and whoever wants to come get drinks if we win.
That's right.
Shout out. Or food. If you're like, I'm not a drinker, but you know what? I'll take some... Potato skins, like, yeah, for sure. Has some potato skins. Why not? On the Devondre Campbell thing, one of the things that stuck out to me about that entire situation, well, A, the fact that it's blown up the way it has is kind of funny to me. He's a very middle-of-the-road player toward the end of his career,
mm-hmm.
deciding not to play in a game that, yeah, like it, I guess it mattered technically, but like they're not going to the playoffs. So, but the fact it was on Thursday night and it was all anybody had to talk about on Friday, I think blew it out of proportion. But I do think it's really interesting the way the 49ers locker room reacted.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you have questions, like somebody in the chatty house, youtube.com/ESPN1320 and twitch.tv/ESPN1320, they said, hey, has Mike Brown lost the locker room? It's like, no, you can tell when a coach loses a locker room, you won't have to ask.
Mm-hmm.
There will be things that happen and you go, oh, that's what happened. Like, that's what that looks like. And people were asking that about Kyle Shanahan, like, oh man, maybe he just lost the locker room. If that was the case, the consensus to a player who has spoken about this publicly wouldn't be, we don't do that here. That is not what this is. That is not what we're about. That's not what this team is about. Like, it was spoken from a very, like, we're a family,
mm-hmm.
and you went, we're a brotherhood, and you turned your back on us. You're done. We're done. Jay Glazer said it in his report on Fox on Sunday on the pregame show. Even if Devondre Campbell wanted to come back and apologize, the players want no parts of him. They want nothing to do with him.
Hmm.
So the fact that that was the consensus to me was a very clear sign that, hey, you know what? This whole everything's awful in Santa Clara and they're all done here and everybody knows they're done and the Shanahan era is over. I don't think that's the case.
I don't think
that's how they would have reacted if it was.
No, I mean, Lenore came out and just blasted him. Yeah. Blasted Campbell yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, called him a locker room cancer.
Yeah.
Like, he went at him.
Yeah.
All of those guys have taken turns.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is a team that's pulled together and said, no. That's not going to be part of who we are.
And it doesn't matter for this year. They're not a playoff team this year.
No.
It doesn't fix that they've been terrible this year. But when you start looking toward next season, it makes you feel a little bit better about next season
mm-hmm.
than if they'd just been like, well, guess he didn't want to play. Me neither. Like, I get it. We're not in the playoff. Like, if there had been that kind of reaction, that's when you know.
Yeah.
But anyways, well, that's all I've got on Devondre Campbell.
But the problem, too, is that you ended up losing that game 12-6, right? Isn't that what it was?
Something, that's exactly what it was.
It was 12-6.
Pathetic.
It was a horrible game, but, like, you had a linebacker who said, I'm not going to play the whole second half. Like, it's possible that you could have helped. It's possible that you could have won that game and somehow stayed alive just a smidgen, but no. No.
What a clown.
Yeah.
What an absolute clown.
I agree.
Like, I don't want to rehash the whole thing. You knew what you were here for. You came here to replace Dre Greenlaw. When Dre Greenlaw came back, you were going to go to the bench.
It's not some...
Welcome to the NFL, dog.
Yeah, it's not some crazy...
And he hadn't been playing so great that it's like, man, can't take this guy off the field. Like, no, he was mid. He was mid to bad.
The whole first, like, 4 weeks of the season, I was blaming him every week for the 49ers being bad.
He had the huge pass interference against the Rams
in
week three.
So many times I was like, I can't believe how bad this guy is.
How many plays was he a step late or didn't set the edge?
Took a bad angle.
Dude, just...
Oh, just
the audacity.
Come on, bro.
The audacity. Anyways.
I can't believe we have to rehash this.
Devondre Campbell's season's over.
It is. I think his career's over, but...
I think so, too.
Yeah. See ya.
I don't think... He's just not good enough. Nobody's going to be like, yeah, we'll take a flyer on that guy.
No.
He didn't know. He's a jerk. And, like, if we take him off the field, he might quit on us?
No.
There's certain things, like, there is a mindset in football. And quitting on your team is, like, the thing you don't do.
I think there's a mindset in every sport that way.
Yeah, yeah.
But... football very specifically, like, yeah. if you decide not to play anymore, like when mm-hmm. you're like in high school or something and you have like a good reason, your friends and your, you know, that you've
no doubt
played with for years mm-hmm. will understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a buddy who decided, hey, I'm not going to play my senior year because I'm a firefighter and I'm going to be a firefighter for mm-hmm. my career. And I don't want to have an injury
sure.
in my senior year of high school football that limits who I can
sure.
be going forward. Like, oh, but, we got you.
But, and if Devondre Campbell had said, and I'm sorry to rehash this, I just haven't gotten to talk about it on the radio yet. If he had said before the game, I'm not going to play tonight. Don't suit me up. Suit up somebody else.
Yeah.
Then fine. All right. Kind of a, kind of a silly move, but whatever. But to take a roster spot,
yeah,
and put the 49ers in a position, and apparently Nick Bosa said he was chirping before the game that he wasn't going to play.
Oh.
And he was making a big deal about it before the game.
That's the worst.
And Bosa said he didn't want to, Nick Bosa said he didn't want to create a distraction and didn't want to bring this up. So Campbell was chirping that he wasn't going to play, and he told coaches in the second quarter that he wasn't going to go in and all this other stuff. Like, he could have just not played. And he still would have been looked down upon for not wanting to play.
Uh-huh.
But it would have been different. It would have been like, well...
Well, it would have been hidden. It would have been masked whatever.
Yeah, it would have been a healthy scratch, and Shanahan would have gotten asked after the game, hey, why didn't Devondre Campbell play? Oh, well, he didn't want to suit up tonight.
Yeah.
And there would have been a discourse, but it would have been less so than what this is. They had to put Demetrius Flanagan Fowles, who was hurt. Who was playing hurt. They had to put him on the field.
They would have...
Put someone else's career in jeopardy.
They would have buried why he didn't play. They would have, because that's what teams do, like, for whatever reason, that's what they do, unless they're trying to send a very distinct message. I mean, like, Manchester United this weekend in the biggest game of the year against Man City, it's the derby, right? They literally told Marcus Rashford and Garnacho that they weren't playing, and not only were they not playing, they weren't even suiting up.
Wow.
It's like, okay, you're out this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, why? Like, well, we didn't like the way you trained. We don't like the body language. Sure. Like everything else, we're you need to get in line. We got a new coach. And if you're not going to get in line, then you're just going to sit at home and watch.
Yeah.
So there is that happens. But but in this situation, like, he just left his team high and dry.
Yeah.
I hope he doesn't play again in the league.
I don't think he will.
Yeah.
Speaking of things being over, the 49ers, according to ESPN, their playoff hopes aren't officially over. It's still less than 0.1% or whatever it is.
How?
But they're done. The postseason hopes, regardless of what the math says, they're over. They've been over for a couple of weeks, but that's a separate thing. I moved on to the draft, where I'm now locked into what the draft order looks like. And the Falcons win last night was a big one. Moved the 49ers from 16th to 15th. Their problem is, and again, we've talked about this before, that strength of schedule tiebreaker.
Yeah.
The 49ers strength of schedule is so good that they're gonna quote unquote win any tiebreaker and fall to the lower pick, the worst pick.
Okay.
So I'll be watching very closely. The 49ers lose in Miami. There's a bunch of other 6 and 8 teams that they win, the Niners could be up near the top 10.
I'm intrigued by this.
I don't think the thing is they're not. The players want to go. The players are not in a space, I don't think, and the team I don't think is in a space where they're like, yeah, hey, we want to go. We want to lose out. We want to go 6-11 because they've got an eye toward next year. You got guys trying to play for snaps. You've got guys trying to play for jobs. You're still trying to assess what Brock Purdy's worth. So I don't think we're going to see them tank in the traditional sense. And I think there's too much pride with their locker room, especially now that this Devondre Campbell thing has happened. I don't think they're just going to lay down. I think you're going to see them try really, really hard to win these next three. Whether they do or not, nah. TBD.
TBD.
Brian Baldinger today on 95.7 The Game with Bonte and Chasky on the morning roast said that right now he would flip Purdy for Sam Darnold.
Okay. Like, I don't know what to say about that. I mean, you're looking at a quarterback.
Okay, I'll say something. That's silly.
Yeah, that's to me. I mean, you're looking at a guy who is in his third NFL season, who's still growing, who had the best running back in the NFL, his number one wide receiver all go down, and his number two wide receiver just decide he's not very good at football anymore. And his number three wide receiver, he got shot in the chest. Like,
Juwan Jennings is number three, but yeah.
Well, yeah, they're number
four. They're first round pick.
Yeah, they're first round pick. So, like, look, there are reasons why Brock Purdy hasn't had a good season, but I also, like, you can't make excuses for him. He has not stepped up.
No.
But Sam Darnold had, like, 3 years as a bad quarterback in the league to do this, and I don't know.
And Sam Darnold has had Jordan Addison and Justin Jefferson and TJ Hawkinson has now come back. And they have Aaron Jones.
Uh-huh.
And they have a really, really freaking awesome defense.
Yeah.
If you flipped Sam Darnold and Brock Purdy, I don't think the numbers for each respective quarterback would also flip with them.
No. No. I mean, Sam Darnold's on a very good team. And he's been good.
He's been awesome. Yeah. Here's what... Sam Darnold's been better than Brock Purdy this year. Flat out.
Oh, no. I
will not argue that.
Yeah.
But I think if you switch their situations, I think you'd want to flip them back. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because that's how Brock is always judged. Well, if somebody else was in Brock's situation, what would they look like? So, I mean, in this situation, we have to have the same exact degree of comparison. Like, okay, like, look, if you're going to compare Sam Darnold to Brock Purdy, like, let's switch it last year where they were both on the same team and one of them was starting and he threw for almost 4,400 yards and 31 touchdowns.
Yeah.
He just, like, he had went through a season where his entire, like, specialty group just was hurt.
Yeah.
Like, all right.
It happens sometimes.
Yeah.
I just don't think that the 49ers would have improved this year if Sam Darnold was their quarterback instead of Brock Purdy. That's all.
Yeah.
And I think the Vikings are probably about the same. And I don't think that's crazy. They're the same tier of quarterback to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the situation with the way the situation has impacted Purdy, I think it would have impacted Darnold the same way.
Of course.
Anyways,
I totally
shout
agree.
Out to Balding. Love Brian Baldinger. Disagree with him on that take. We got some other 49ers reporting from over the weekend. We will get to that. We'll get to 6 quick thoughts. We'll dive into the Kings game from last night as well. Did last night move the needle for you in terms of the urgency to make a trade? We'll talk about that next. That's James. I'm Kyle. We're the Insiders. Hour number 2 coming up in a second here on ESPN 1320 at Sacramento Sports Center.